You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today we're going to talk about something that affects everything we cover on this show. It's about how Americans figure out what is true. Because the information ecosystem isn't just changing, but it's collapsing. And if you care about healthcare or reproductive rights or democracy, you really need to understand what's happening right now. And I'll just share a little bit about the stakes from my perspective as a healthcare provider. When I started practicing medicine, if the CDC said something, people just believed it because it was the CDC. We would go to the CDC website for guidelines and information and studies and all of that stuff. We never questioned it. But now, RFK Jr. tweets vaccine disinformation or health half-truths or recently a video of him and Kid Rock working out in a sauna with jeans on, and they get millions of views and people are watching it and they're paying attention. And that means that for people like me, like actual doctors who went to medical school, we spend about as much time online combating this misinformation and these like crazy things that are happening as we do one-on-one with patients in the exam room, often doing the same thing. The information ecosystem didn't just change, it kind of inverted. The fringe has become mainstream, and the mainstream has become suspect, which is exactly why people like me, experts, truth tellers, those of us who believe in building an engaged, informed community, we have to expand the different ways that we reach you. So we're going to talk more about that later. And trust me, you're going to want to follow along because election season is coming and there are some really great things on the horizon. But joining me for our conversation today, I love this so much because Abraham Lierley is usually our producer. He's usually behind the scenes, but today he's going to have this conversation with us. I didn't mention he is also a public school teacher and he's my number one son. Abe, today you're in the spotlight. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm out of the box. I'm no longer sitting in the corner. I think I'm still doing hand signs just to keep us on track, but I'm no longer fine.
You have like a double duty because you've got to keep track of the clock and do all that. But also, yes, but you're a great conversationalist and I love, you are really the heart of this show. You're my advisor. We have conversations every week about what we're doing. So it's cool to have you on screen. So thank you.
Yeah, of course.
For starters, do you want to summarize what happened recently with Stephen Colbert and CBS? Because it's a great example of what's going on with legacy media.
It's always nice to start with a fun story. So we have been talking about why media is getting, or why legacy media is getting, or is losing its cultural pull, and losing its listeners and losing its viewers. And it's hard to think of a better example than what's happened this week. We are taping this one on February 18th, just in case anything changes, because it's been a day-by-day thing. But
and everything CBS, changes all the time, so.
100%. Mm-hmm. CBS 2 days ago decided that they were not going to allow Stephen Colbert, a late-night talk show host, to air a interview with James Tallarico, who is running in the Democratic primary in Texas to be the senator there, so running to challenge Ted Cruz. And they decided that they did not want to incur the wrath of Trump's FCC, specifically Brendan Carr, who, although had not made a specific threat about it, they were just preempting it and trying to get out in front of what they assumed Brendan Carr would be saying. And they asked Stephen Colbert to not air it, to pay attention to the equal time rule, which has never been enforced for talk shows in the history of talk shows. Stephen Colbert was not allowed to air a 15-minute interview. It backfired. What's the name of it? Streisand effect?
Oh, yes.
It's Streisand effect, because what are we at? 6 million views
on YouTube? Online,
which is, mm-hmm. you know, six times what these normally get, seven times what these normally get. So it's amplified it rather than containing it. And he went on his show and said that they had told asked him to not talk about the decision that had been made and how it had been made, but he decided to do it anyways, and he talked about the meetings that he had with lawyers and what it looks like behind the scenes when he's getting notes. And then today, there was an awkward press release that came out of CBS that talked about how they had not canceled it, and they had not said that he couldn't, but they had given him legal guidance and presented the options. But they didn't talk to Stephen Colbert about that press release before they put it out, and he had used their verbiage in his first episode when he was explaining what was going on. So he wasn't sure why they felt the need to make that statement, and in a sort of theatrical show of I can't trust this anymore and this whole thing is corrupt, he crumpled up the statement that was made and picked it up with a doggy bag. Like he was picking up dog crap.
So after the backlash, CBS yes. then came out with a press statement saying, that isn't exactly what we meant. We're not actually caving to political pressure. Is that right?
And they put it back on him saying, you know, we're not caving to political pressure. We just told him what the rules were. Mm. And then he was presented with options for how to fulfill his obligation to those rules, which was just an incredible sort of pivot and also not at all what he says happened. So it there's this weird he said, she said at this point. It's a really interesting situation, and it sort of goes to show how there's been this mass consolidation, and everyone is sort of vying for merger approval for the FCC. And so even without saying anything, just by previous actions, even though they might have gotten shut down with the Jimmy Kimmel situation, people are still afraid, and people are still preemptively caving and trying to buy favor with this FCC so that they can get those mergers. I mean, that is the only way that they see forward for their business.
Right. The Jimmy Kimmel situation, of course, being ABC caving to political pressure, taking Jimmy Kimmel off the air when Donald Trump demanded that they do that, but then putting him back on the air afterwards. And, you know, I have to say, like, Abe, you're Gen Z, I'm Gen X. I still remember Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow and, like, people watching the nighttime news and that just being gospel. You didn't even question that. And for decades, we were told, trust the networks, trust the editors. They have fact checkers. They have standards and practices. There are FCC guidelines. And we knew that they were the gatekeepers of the truth, but we also knew that they had a lot of safeguards to keep the crazy out. But now it seems like they're keeping the truth out when it's politically inconvenient. So why should anybody trust them over an independent Substack writer or a podcaster, which is more what Gen Z is turning to these days?
It's a big question you said. Mm-hmm. That's a very unfair question. A little mean.
I also asked your next oldest brother, and I will share his.
Yeah, feedback. Absolutely. I hope I beat his answer out of the water. it's not a saying, beat his answer out of the water. I think that there's still a lot of importance to those arguments. Like, it is important to have a strong fact-checking team. It is really important to have the resources that these big institutions have, to have journalists that are doing investigative reporting in all areas of the globe, to have these people who have, you know, they're given salary for 5 years to dig down on one specific story. I mean, those resources matter. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's hard to draw a straight line and say you can't trust any legacy media anyway, because those resources and the job that they're doing is still so important. But wrestling with that, as well as the sort of bending that's happening towards the wills of the owners, who are seeing it more as an asset in a portfolio rather than, you know, many of these companies now are owned by these mega billionaires. You have Jeff Bezos with the Washington Post, and he's not thinking about the Washington Post when he wakes mm-hmm. up in the morning. He's mm-hmm. thinking about Blue Origin. He's thinking about Amazon. Like, the guy has more on his head, and he sees the Washington Post hurting everything else. The Washington Post is the first thing on that cutting block, versus something like the New York Times, where it's still owned by the same company, by the same private corporation, by the same people who have that same mission statement. So it's not about selling out as much. They're obviously trying to. They're trying to make money back. But it's trying to wrestle that and then feeling the sort of seesaw tip the completely opposite way when you look at independent media and you think these guys have very few resources. They don't seem to have the pressures on them, though, at the same time. Like, they don't have a big business coming in and saying, you shouldn't do this. Like, they're all getting their money from NordVPN. They're getting their money from BetterHelp. You know, they're getting their money from these sort of mass market ads. And they don't have these billionaires who are saying, you know, don't say anything about Trump, even if it will get you eyeballs, because that's going to hurt our chances of being a $1 trillion company in 100, you know, in like 2 or 3 months. Like, they don't have that to worry.
But they do. But they are selling supplements or some other thing. Like, it just seems like there's always something underlying the message in many cases.
Yeah. Gotta make your money somehow. And I guess there's this sort of, there's been so much focus, especially since coverage of the Iraq war. There's been so much focus on the contradictions and the unfairness and the conflicts of interest of traditional media, and independent media has really flourished, especially with all these new mediums that are out there and the way that you can access consumers directly. But there hasn't been that deep dive into everything. And even when there is a deep dive, and you know, you look and you see that Tim Pool is getting money from Russia for his stupid beanies or whatever, you then can only take down one guy, and it's hard to take that one guy down as significantly. Each person has sort of the credibility of an entire news network back in the day. Like, all the little chips that had to take that one person down, or had to take the organization down, it takes equally as much for just like single people operating off of unknown money.
It's just such a totally different ecosystem. And I think about it the way that I think about medicine, because I always think about medicine this way, because we, again, as I said earlier, we used to really think that these were institutions that were infallible, but then the CDC bungled the COVID messaging. Because doctors think about evidence and data, and they're not thinking about how is the public going to consume this information. And there have been a number of other examples like this. And then RFK comes along, and he's exploiting these real institutional failures, and he's using that to create conspiracy-type theories that push dangerous lies. We don't know why. I mean, do you think people actually believe what RFK Jr. is saying? Because when I see him on YouTube or whatever, I'm like,
I think that he has a certain level of credibility that appreciate in a friend and shouldn't trust in a leader. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, everyone's got their friend who they tell you their story about, you know, doing cocaine off a toilet seat, and you're like, wow.
I thought that was AI.
Vicariously.
That was so unreal that I until I saw that on the NBC Evening News, and like I forgot who the host is, but he was like, and RFK Jr. talked about doing cocaine off. I'm like, what?
Well, and the dead bear in Central Park. And like, I think a lot of people think that his heart is in the right place. And that he's sort of like leading in a direction, but you know, he obviously listen to things this guy says. You can't trust his professional judgment or his personal judgment.
He's leading in a direction that is absolutely true, but I don't know if it's a direction where we need to go. And you know, the problem is that we've got these institutions still that we need to respect, but we also have these individuals who are authentic. And how do you bridge that? Which is why we've got to be in all the spaces right now. We've got to meet people where they are. So when CBS censors elected officials, when the CDC communicates poorly, when these institutions fail us, who do we actually trust? That's the question that we're answering today. And that answer might surprise you. So hang around, because you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show with me and Gen Z public school teacher Abraham Lyerly, and we'll see you on the other side of this break.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, with Abraham Lyerly, usually our producer, but today he's on screen because we're talking about what's happening with the new media ecosystem. Can we trust legacy media? Do we have to turn to social media? Are those people trustable? It's so hard to know what we can rely on. Abe, who are those trusted voices now? Because traditional institutions have a credibility crisis. And then you look at like influencers and podcasters like Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan has more reach than the entire mainstream media combined. So, what is the question? Yes. Who do you trust and why?
Why?
Yeah.
I think that there's an assumption in this question that because there's so much of a media narrative, there's not even media, there's just so much of a public narrative about mainstream media being untrustworthy that no one can trust them. I still read quite a bit of mainstream media. I still read from New York Times. I read from Fox News. I read from Newsweek when it pops up across my desk, and you gotta read. A lot of these are like you have to read past the headline because the headline is just desperate.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a hook. They're just trying to get your attention.
It's a hook. And then there's quite a few local creators that I follow, but I very rarely trust something from social media unless you can. It feels almost like you have to build this spider. I don't know if anyone here has seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I feel like Charlie in the Pepe Sylvie episode when he's got the messed up hair and a cork board behind him with pictures and red bits of string between everything, and he looks like he hasn't slept in days. Mm-hmm. And he's like, here's how I know it's true. It showed up in these three outlets. One of them's right. You know, the influencers pointed me to something real this time. Something real.
It's funny that you say that.
It's exhausting.
Well, I asked your next younger brother, who is like 18 months younger than you. He's also an adult and a Gen Z guy. And I asked him about Walter Cronkite, and he was like, who? And so I showed him a video of Walter Cronkite in 1964, I guess, with JFK's assassination. And he was like, I get my news from a bunch of sources, and I fact check as I need to. But he doesn't look at any, he's the opposite of you. He doesn't look at any legacy media. He is getting everything from Reddit and I don't know where else. And it's totally different than what I'm getting.
And I'm not gonna.
You shake your head.
You're not going to get me to talk bad about Judah on podcast on the radio. It's not going to happen.
I love him. He changed the faucet today, by the way, and he did it brilliantly, but the hot and the cold were switched up, but we fixed it.
So maybe not brilliantly, but, you know, pretty close. I think that, first off, it's crazy to just show somebody Walter Cronkite, pull a Gen Z person aside, just show him Walter Cronkite and be like, yeah, this guy? Yeah? Like, he wasn't a particularly spicy figure, and that's why he was really good for what he did, but he was a steady, reliable figure, and that's a hard thing to get off of
somebody holding a phone up to your face. It was all we had back then. You know, there wasn't any social media, so like you watched Walter Cronkite because he was the only guy who had the news.
Yeah, no, 100%. And he was a calm, steady voice. Mm-hmm. So, like, there was that trust that got built up, which you get none of if someone just shoves a phone in your face. Walter Cronkite.
That's fair.
But I think that his approach is something that a lot of people have, where they fact check as needed. And there's a lot of priors that get reconfirmed, even if mm-hmm. those priors might be factually incorrect. And I mean, that happens to all of us throughout our daily lives. But, like, I think that especially going off of just social media, you know, if you're just reading Facebook, you're going to get a right-wing tilted perspective. And there's a lot of stories that you'll never see across your feed. And if you're only on Reddit, you're going to get a lot of left-wing perspectives on things. And you're not going to see a lot of things from the right wing unless you're purposely putting yourself in those environments. And I don't know about you. I don't like to put myself in those environments that often. If it's a community generated news source and a lot of influencers, I don't want to put myself in the opposing party's camp for too long. I don't want to see those things scrolling by me. I will check the official news coverage. I will read conservative media where it's a little bit sanitized and it's not just like the crazy things that people are posting online. But like, yeah, just going by I'll fact check as needed, you end up not fact checking a lot. And a lot of
things. Or where are you checking your facts?
If you're checking your facts on Reddit from Reddit, it's a bit incestuous.
It is. Well, and here's the question I have for you, because you have grown up in a different environment than I grew up in. What about your kids? You teach middle school kids. Where do you think they're getting? I mean, they're not like watching the news for the most part, but where do they get their information and how do they consume that? And what do you see?
Well, and they're not getting their news from influencers like political. Like, I don't have kids that are sitting around watching Ben Shapiro or watching crooked podcasts or something. Mm-hmm. I don't have that going on. Most of the things that kids seem to be getting today is communicated through memes. So if something catches on in 6-7, if something catches on in this sort of, if it's a big enough deal to break out of the adult world, or if it's something that is sort of jarring enough that it gets people focusing on it, it becomes a meme, and then that will eventually sort of disseminate to younger generations. So you end up with a disturbing example of this is we've been trying to push this down a little bit, but there's been a meme going around where kids will just start saying Charlie Charlie Kirky, or they'll slap each other in the back of the heads and say Charlie Kirk.
Oh.
Yeah, well, it's and they don't know who Charlie Kirk is. Some of them right. do, some of them don't, but it's become ubiquitous past the man himself. If you right. see me making signs, that's not about the conversation. I'm trying to keep our schedule up. I'm doing like a miming thing at once, but it's a lot of information that gets consumed passively through memes. Recently, it's been a lot of kids joking about Epstein. And you know, one of those
they have no idea what it means.
They have no idea what it means. They have no idea that it's taken down world governments and prime ministers and entire like political
and crushed so many survivors. Totally.
They don't know what the impact is, but they know that it's in the cultural zeitgeist, and that's kind of what they're getting. If it makes its way to short form video memes, the kids get it.
Right. I am here with my Gen Z public school teacher son, Abraham Lyerly, and you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I'm joined today by our producer, also my number one son, also a middle school music teacher. Yeah, I know. Number one in my heart, also in chronologic order. We've been talking about the information ecosystem from legacy to social media, and who you trust to deliver the news. If you missed any part of the show, you can always catch it wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see us on YouTube, where Abe is doing some very fancy hand gestures to keep us on time.
I'm like the world's worst cheerleader over here.
Yeah. No, you're a great cheerleader, honey.
Give me a five. Sorry.
There's all right. Let's pick up where we left off. So we talked about how institutions are not the power players that they used to be, because individuals are kind of taking over on social media. They're all over the place, but they may not be accurate. And a lot of it depends on the platform where you're getting your information. And the question is, it isn't so much like which platform is best, but how do you consume that information? And how do you create information for the people who are there? So are you game? I know you are not a huge social media consumer, but let's go platform. I know,
I can tell you what's going on in these, and I can tell you how it's being felt at a middle school level, because I have a lot of kids that are on these, and they show me a lot of content from it.
Yeah, so happy to start with TikTok, because that is like the middle school platform also for young people.
Yeah, it's way more than middle school. This is all the way from, in a lot of cases, kids are getting on this in preschool, though God knows they shouldn't, and, you know, it's all the way up to full-grown adults. There's, you know, 70-year-olds out there with TikTok addictions, but it does concentrate quite a bit in Generation Alpha. It is their social media site. Short-form video has become incredibly native for kids these days. Is there anything specific that you're looking for?
Like, what is it about TikTok that sucks them? TikTok is short-form. You know, these are videos that are like 45 seconds long, and it's so hard to cram any nuanced information into a 45-second video. So it's like this instant gratification that is just constant.
I think that the most successful part of TikTok is that most of it is not important. There's of the 45 seconds at a time that you're spending on TikTok, very little of what you're seeing or very little of what the kids are seeing and is informational content. It's a lot of stupid memes. It's a lot of NBA clips. It's a lot of cooking videos and people eating and travel content. It's a lot of stuff from across the spectrum. And every once in a while, things sort of get inserted that either match the political preference or the worldview of the creator, or there's all these little ways that cultures sort of sift through this.
You said it, but culture. It's yeah, culture.
I think it really is. I think that a lot of kids who don't use TikTok and a lot of people who don't use these short form video apps sort of feel like they're missing out mm-hmm. on a lot of what is driving the culture, especially when you're at that point in your life, you're locked in a school, you know, you are stuck with the same age level cohort. There is several trends going around and everyone is in on the trend. This sort of the Rosetta Stone to understanding what middle school and high school and elementary school culture is right now is TikTok and is short form videos. If that makes any sense.
It makes total sense in the from the perspective of like that is reality. And as a mom who raised four kids who are now all young adults, I can't even imagine. Like, we were limiting your screen time to pediatricians
Which
were saying no
idea.
More than 15 minutes.
I will tell you the students that I have who do not have phone access at all times are they know what to do with themselves when they have a free moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like free time happens and suddenly they're crawling all over tables and like punching their friends. It's like these are the kids who know how to sit and find some and like draw on a scrap of paper or like play a board game or just have mm-hmm. a conversation with. These kids have life skills that go beyond this sort of need to cram entertainment into every moment. So yes, please continue to like be careful with your kids' technology use. Be careful with your own technology use. It can be too much.
Let's switch to YouTube, because I think in a way YouTube has that algorithm that keeps building on itself. So it's that thing that now has become what's playing on your TV and is playing in the background the way TV, like broadcast, used to be playing. It's algorithm based.
And YouTube went down for a couple hours yesterday and it's like the end of the world. Everyone's cooking dinner and they don't know what to watch anymore. You're telling me I gotta pay for one of the 7 streaming services? No, thank you.
But you get to choose because it's, you know, it's your algorithm. So it's the clips, it's the full episodes, but it always feeds you that next thing. So it's constant and it's something that you are interested in seeing. It's the new TV.
I think so. And I think a lot like regular TV, it's got a lot of, I don't want to say shadowy inputs behind the screen. It's not like some sort of Wizard of Oz thing where there's somebody making very intentional decisions behind the screen. It's the algorithm impacts so much more than just what you get fed by your prior preferences. It also determines what types and formats of videos get prioritized. And creators tend to chase the algorithm. So there's this sort of company makes an incremental change that they don't have any ill will or malice towards, but it has this cascading series of effects of now the content creators are chasing that, and then the content that people are getting fed and getting normalized to becomes what the algorithm was changed to create. But I think that, you can cultivate sort of your own, YouTube feed pretty easily. And I think that they do a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My overwhelming take. There's a reason it's like TV. It's pretty entertaining. They do a more or less good job.
They do. Whereas Twitter, which I still have a hard time calling X, so I'm just going to call it Twitter. If you are up for a fight, go to Twitter, because it's so pugilistic and it's so negative and it's so ugly and it's, you know, mostly just texts, but people stay there because that's where the politicians are. That's where media still is. It's like people have FOMO and they can't just quit it.
Mm-hmm. And it feels like a lot of the people that were staying on Twitter for artists and for, like, if you follow an organization and you want to sort of get their news feed right up to date, or a journalist, but it's where you follow the movers and shakers. And I feel like a lot of those people have been slow to move. And there was a brief moment of like, is it going to be Threads? Is Blue Sky mm-hmm. going to take over?
Mastodon.
Oh, God. Yeah, Mastodon. There's still some people out there who are like, Mastodon is the best. They're going to see it. We'll see. We'll all see. We're going to be on Mastodon by mm-hmm. 2029. But I think that Twitter has shown itself, or X has shown itself, to be increasingly hostile to a lot of creators that are on there. Mm-hmm. Artists, for example. If you're a model, you don't want to be uploading pictures to Twitter at this point. Or, like, I mean, if you're a human being, you don't want your picture uploaded to Twitter at this point.
No. Honestly, if I feel like fighting with somebody, like I go to Twitter. But if otherwise...
We haven't even talked about the deep fake porn scandal.
Yeah.
This, right?
Yeah, well, say it.
Well, so there's been... they've been updating Grok, which is the AI system that is built in to Twitter specifically. Grok is... They've sort of carved out a lane as this very frontier model that is not as concerned with safety and is trying to strike a sort of edgier tone. They've gone through a lot of revisions to make it less woke, whatever that means. It normally means that it mentions civil rights or something, or says that trans people exist. Or some other pretty benign fact. But in doing so, they added a new image generator. They purchased a company, I can't remember its name, and they built their image generator into Grok, and they let users just type at Grok and then put in a request for the Grok bot, and it would generate an image. And it included letting you take images of just other human beings that they might have uploaded and putting them into bikinis or revealing situations. Or essentially, you could create a deepfake porn of anybody by just having a picture. And this was up for, I believe, a month. There was a lot. This was right over Christmas, I believe.
Aww.
This was right over the holiday season. And in leaving it up for so long, they were eventually forced to sort of segregate it. But they decided that instead of removing these permissions or retooling how they're letting this happen, they're letting their bot generate nude or almost nude images of random women and children online. And I mean, like, children. It had very few guardrails.
It's the guardrails. It's the lack of guardrails, whether you're on Twitter or Facebook or...
They made this whole public statement. They're like, we have guardrails. And the guardrail is you can't use it unless you are a paid subscriber.
Oh, yeah.
if you want to generate deep fake nudes of children, you have to pay us $9 a month. It might not be $9. It might be cheaper.
It's so creepy.
Everything is more expensive except for that. Welcome to Trump's America.
So to get away from that ugliness, so many people went to other things like Threads and Blue Sky. Threads is like the meta version of that. It's like the nicer Twitter, but it really hasn't taken hold. And Blue Sky really hasn't either. I think initially there was a big surge on Blue Sky, but it's just not this. It's like primitive Twitter, but it just doesn't have the same kind of conversations. I don't know. It's like all the, I don't know. Are you on either of these platforms?
No, I tried to be on Blue Sky for a little bit. I looked at Threads. When it was just getting started, it felt very much like, wow, this is a new social media. Everyone's putting out their wow, just moved here posts, and then nothing followed it.
Right.
Like there's some artists that moved there because they don't want their stuff getting fed into an AI model. But aside from that, I really haven't seen. I haven't seen a sizable enough migration to make me go, wow, I should go to this site.
Well,
right now, I'm very like, I'm off Twitter. I'm not getting back on any Twitter-like substances right now.
Well, and okay, let's talk about the meta-like substances, which is Instagram and Facebook. And I have to say, Instagram is probably where I live the most because it's pictures and it's videos and it's like what feels like home to me. But it's for millennials and it's for Gen X. Are your people on Instagram?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of Gen Z and Gen Alpha are on Instagram for the stories and for short form videos.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those two are probably the driving factors of Instagram's growth. I don't know a lot of people who still use Instagram for just taking and sharing pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I was never in that camp of people. So,
all right, how many people do you know who are on Facebook now?
Quite a few, and they're all my coworkers.
Really?
I know very few people who are younger than me. And not to call my coworkers old, this is just like I don't know anyone who's in their 20s and just like, I need to be on Facebook, unless they are on it for the short form video again.
Well, in Facebook, a lot of the stuff is like, you can post on Instagram and it'll automatically post onto Facebook. But Facebook also has a lot of community gathering kind of thing, so you kind of like still have to be on Facebook because that's
and
like the
marketplace. I'm on there to look at classroom decor and cheap guitars, you know.
Yeah, like, it's like the
every once in a
cooler.
While I'll start scrolling and then I'm like, oh god, what am I doing? What is this? terrible.
You're a boomer in your head. Mm-hmm, I know. Well, I think the bottom line is that every platform is a little different, and we have to meet people where they are, and you have to be where you feel comfortable. But that makes it that much more complicated. So, speaking of things that are changing, let's talk about what's on the horizon and the many different places that you're going to be able to find us. Already can find us, because this conversation is really just getting started. And Abe and I are going to spill the tea. Is that the right way to say it in Gen Z? Spill the tea?
Yeah. Tell them what's going to happen.
Good job, Mom. You're not going to want to miss what comes up next. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, here with my number one son, Abraham Lyerly, public school teacher. Usually just the producer, but he's on screen now. Hey, Abe.
Hello, hello.
For the record, during the break... During the break, Abe informed me that it is not spill the tea. It is give me the tea. And I was thinking spill the beans. And that's how your Gen Z and Gen X problem happens. Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
We'll fix it.
All right. So let's talk about, we've been talking about the information ecosystem, legacy media versus social media. Who do you trust? There's so much going on right now. Where do you go from here? And where we are going from here is we're expanding our Substack. We're taking a deep dive. So every week I do put out a Substack newsletter, but there's going to be more there because you can do so much more. There are so fewer limits and so many more opportunities to do interviews, to put a letter together, to do collaborations. And, you know, I love a good collab. So this is kind of where the real work lives. Abe, how do you feel about this whole Substack expansion?
I'm really excited. It's going to be nice being able to choose our own format and sort of break free from any sort of strange restrictions on content and to free ourselves up to make more of it.
Yeah. I'm excited to just be able to like go into a place and do an interview that lasts just a couple minutes long or do a live here and there. Because, I mean, I'm going to hang out with Chris Taylor tomorrow. Did I mention Annie Andrews? Do you know who Annie Andrews is? Oh, I am. No, it's okay. Annie Andrews is a pediatrician and she's running for U.S. Senate against Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. She's coming on. Yeah, there are all of these people who are like queued up, but they don't have that much time because it's election season. So just to be able to have those conversations in a different kind of format is going to be a lot of fun. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about YouTube because all of those videos are going to be broadcast on YouTube. Plus, you can still catch the full podcast episodes and all the clips that are optimized for sharing. So that's going to be fun. We're going to be on all the other platforms as well, Instagram, Facebook, everything we talked about in the last segment, but optimizing for each segment. And then there's some really fun stuff that's not related to social media at all. Remember our documentary that we shot, Abe?
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah.
It's ready?
Well, not quite yet. It's coming. And I can't say too much, but I had a conversation the other day with Christy Turlington Burns. You might remember Christy Turlington. She was one of the supermodels back in the day. She has an organization called Every Mother Counts. She herself experienced a traumatic birth outcome where she had a hemorrhage and her life was at risk. And she turned that experience, she and her husband, Ed Burns, who is a filmmaker, turned that experience into an organization where they make films and they help to tell people or help to give people opportunities to tell stories. So we are, did you make any plans for Mother's Day? Because I'm going to be hanging out with Christy Turlington Burns on Mother's Day.
Okay, well, then no.
Because you and your brothers.
You need Mother's Day. You and your brothers. Christy on Mother's Day. It's fine.
You're so good about being like, hey, Mom, let's go for a bike ride on Mother's Day. And I'm always it's a great idea.
You know
idea.
Me, I'm always saying, let's hop on the bike. let's get on a bike.
Abe does not like riding bikes his entire life.
I'm not going to trash on bikers. I'm glad that you have something you enjoy. questionable not... decision, but you know, we all need something.
It's not your love, but that's okay. My love is maternal health, and I get to do that with Christy Turlington Burns in New York on Mother's Day and after that. So keep an eye out for Every Mother Counts. Go to everymothercounts.org to find out more about the work that she's doing. And then, of course, we've got election season coming up. So all of these candidates from Texas to South Carolina to Wisconsin, there are going to be so many people that we're going to be talking with to try to elevate some of the voices that are trying to save our democracy and bring that authenticity that people are just desperate for these days. Those voices will be there as well. So, I mean, it's going to be, we're going to hold power accountable. Yeah, yes. It's a good, and being able to give the truth tellers, the storytellers, the candidates a place to talk about the things that they really, I mean, this is not candidates trying to sell you something. This is candidates talking about trying to restore faith in government. Which I don't know if you're feeling it right now, but I certainly am not.
Well, they're trying to sell us democracy. I'm okay with that. A little door-to-door democracy salesman. I just need it.
Oh, I love a door-to-door democracy salesman.
Maybe not the door-to-door part, but a democracy salesman.
So to make sure that you don't miss anything, subscribe, follow. Go wherever you go for your social media, because, you know, as we've been discussing this entire time, this is where we're getting our content right now. You can find me there at Dr. Kristen Lierley, whether it's Instagram or Substack or YouTube or Facebook. I am there. And engage, have conversations, send messages, like, do things that bring people together and have those conversations in the places where they need to happen. Right now, there are a lot of, not great conversations and bots that are out there. We can get past that, but it's going to require all of us to engage. So we started the show talking about collapse, institutions failing, trust being broken, misinformation everywhere. But here's the thing. The tools to fight back are closer to home and better than ever if you are using them responsibly. And the information war isn't over, it's just shifting. And so are we. Abe, are you ready for this?
I'm ready for it.
You're always ready for it. You are just such an incredible companion, and I'm so grateful to you for everything that you do. Thanks for hanging out with me today, and for producing, and editing, and advising, and all of the other stuff that you do every single week. In addition to thanking Abe, I need to thank Nick Tierman, who is our technical advisor. Nick also wrote our theme music. And let's not forget Nathaniel Gonzalez, who creates our thumbnails and always has a pinch of Gen Z sage advice to go along with the thumbnails. Thanks so much for listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. And until next time, take care of yourself and each other.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.